during these days of craziness. It never hurts to bring a little happiness and joy and connection into things. And also joy is a crucial part of the Buddhist path, of the mindfulness path. It's one of the Brahma-viharas, sympathetic joy, and one of the seven factors of awakening, joy. And it's something that arises as concentration and meditation deepens. It just arises as dopamine, just floods the brain. So instead of telling a joke or saying like Ellen or Oprah might, if you've all just won your dream vacation, I'm going to pay for all of you to go to wherever you want to go. I just thought we should just be happy for the sake of being happy, to gladden the mind. And that's the heart of good Dharma practice, as we sit first in silence and calm and find some stability or groundedness, we hope, and then see the joy that arises. And then something else, sort of connected to that, that has been on my mind recently is that is a matter of wisdom, or the hardcore Dharma doctrine is that there really should be five noble truths, not just the four. And I actually remember this was first introduced to us in the Dedicated Practitioners Program at Spirit Rock, where we were invited to try to rewrite the noble truths as we might rewrite them. And but what came to me was that fundamental to it all was some quality that our very aliveness is beautiful, and it's a treasure, and it's very fragile. We're very sensitive, but our very lives, the very experience of life, is this beautiful treasure to cherish. And yeah, and to me, that's the fundamental. That goes first. And that life does have joy in it, but that goes first before we recognize that, yeah, life inevitably has things that present difficulties and suffering, and how are we going to work with that? But to recognize, yeah, there's something really precious here that as a species we hold on to. And I think underneath it all, even for me in my worst, most oppressed, most swirling my mind out of control times, there was something in me that really cherished my life, even though I didn't believe it, but I kept going. And I had one of life's dukkha moments last night and this morning, a flat tire. And I had to deal with how are we going to deal with that flat tire, right? That would be, in my version, the second noble truth, right? Not the first. The life is not perfect. So I went down to get the tire fixed at this place in the Bayview, which is pretty near my house. And while they were doing it, I just took a walk in the neighborhood and just walked around. It was a beautiful sunny day. And then I just turned on a street, and then started to sense an odor. And then I'll spare you all the details, but there are things we see way too often on the streets in San Francisco that I saw and smelled, and there's trash and everything. And then behind a truck, there was a man actually living out of his car. His car is filled all his possessions, and he was obviously having a really, really tough time. And I didn't talk to him. I tried to just give him a nice smile, but something that just struck me as I looked at him and then kept walking, but I saw, in the midst of how hard his life was and what conditions he was in, he had a surgical mask around his neck. And he had a mask to wear when he was interacting with others, because I hope, I just decided to believe that something in him, even when life was really, really, really bad, He cherished his own life and maybe cherished the lives of others by trying to be safe and to be respectful whenever he did interact with others. And maybe he just got the mask, maybe when he went to get a meal somewhere and they were forced him to have a mask, they gave him one. But even then, he was feeding himself. And it touched me in a sense as his how much he cherished life, you know, amidst all that was going on, this beautiful cherishing of life. And so for me, that underlies it all. It just underlies it all. And that's why we practice, because we love life so much. And so so then connected to that, I remember last week, a trip to begin with, he had asked us sort of in the chat box to just to share things that we might be going through. And just ideas, maybe of things to talk about. And one that I really appreciated I stuck with me, and I reflected over the week is, you know, somebody said something to the effect that they were, you know, they were struggling or having a tough time with loneliness. And yeah, it just resonated with me. And I'm sort of thinking in the suttas and all these teachings, I don't think of the sutta on loneliness, or there's so much about sitting by yourself, you know, and you have to seclude yourself and all that. But loneliness is so real. It's so real and something that I've experienced a lot myself. And I really appreciate it, the person sharing that being so real. And then it came to me, I don't know, midweek, one of my just absolute favorite haikus and poems, and some of you know that I love the queer Japanese 17th century haiku master Basho, who is considered the greatest of the classical Japanese haiku writers. So he has a haiku that spoke to me, and I wanted to share it with you. And there's a little bit of a story to it. It's unusual in this way, but he was asked by a monk actually to write a haiku to accompany a painting. And so there's a little preface and then the haiku. So Unchiku, who was a monk living in Kyoto, had painted what appeared to be a self-portrait. It was a painting of a monk whose face was turned away. Unjinku showed me the portrait and asked me to write a verse to go with it. Thereupon I wrote as follows. You are over 60, and I am nearing 50. We are both living in a world of dreams. This portrait depicts a man in a dream. And here I add the words of another such man talking in his sleep. You can turn this way. I am also lonely this autumn evening. So he tells the man who painted the portrait, looking down, sad, you could turn this way. I'm also lonely this autumn evening. And I remember when I read that the very first time, I had a wonderful book of Basho poems, and I was just going through it. And it just broke my heart. It struck to my heart. And in a sense, a beautiful poem that has survived the centuries need not have me comment on it. But something I think that really struck me was it was so unexpected. I was expecting a haiku, maybe comforting the monk or telling something about, I don't know, solitude or loneliness, but instead he reveals himself, and he reveals his own loneliness. And this is a man, a person who's devoted his life to wandering and lives in seclusion so much, and writes out of seclusion. And I did a little more research on the haiku, and it was actually written while he was alone in a hut in a forest for the summer in the mountains, because it was cooler there. And he wrote another poem there about finding a tree that gave shade to his hut. And that was his friend for the summer. So it was, yeah, to me, by self-revealing that, you know, he touched a deeper level of our connection and our empathy toward each other. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm a social person, actually. But when I read, you know, in the suttas, people secluding themselves for months and years or whatever it is, I just think, I don't see how they do that. You know, I'm never going to be up to that. But Basho, this master of seclusion, reveals that part of seclusion is actually feeling loneliness, because that's exactly what he was feeling as he was secluding himself. And then as I thought about it some more, I realized that I was both Basho sometimes, and I was the monk sometimes. And there's sort of an irony for me that at this time of the shelter in place, you know, my husband is home and working from home, and we actually have a lot of time to spend together that we don't otherwise have. And so I'm not feeling as much loneliness now, but often in normal life, I'm alone a lot because I'm alone at home doing my work. And so I feel loneliness a whole lot. And that's how it struck me on both Basho, and maybe we all are, both the monk and Basho. So yeah, I just wanted to share that and express my appreciation to that being brought into the group last week. And to have, you know, Basho was a queer person, and to have him speak to us across the centuries this evening. So, you know, Basho wrote that in the 17th century. And I think the 20th century translation of his haiku would not be, you know, you could turn this way, I'm also lonely this autumn evening. It would be, you could zoom this way, I'm also lonely this autumn evening. So at this point, I wanted to break into dyads on Zoom, and Stephen is going to do this, and offer ourselves, you know, how about roughly 10 minutes, and then we'll just have a couple minutes when we all come back together and we can share a thing or two. But feel free, and if you're have two people together, feel free to you can be a threesome, or, you know, however it this is, you know, don't worry about it, and share whatever you feel like. Actually, you know, if you want to share a struggle that you're going with and just like somebody to listen to it, that would be wonderful. And if you want to share something you love about this time and something you hope to, you know, keep going after things go back to a different state, share that. Or share whatever on your mind. It's really quite open. Stephen, why don't you go break us apart? And then it'll be about, you know, maybe 9 or 10 minutes. And just monitor yourselves so you both talk in whatever form you want. And then we'll all come back together just for a quick few minutes and close. Sound good?
Nancy.
Hi.
I think we're a group. Oh, okay.
How you doing?
Hi, Steven.
How you doing?
Doing okay.
Good.
We were just saying, you know, it feels a little crazy because, you know, Richard was just sharing with us similarly that we're very fortunate. We have everything that we need at this moment. You know, who knows how long this may go on, what might change, but, you know, we've got pretty much what we need right now. And just sort of, you know, that next to folks who very much don't have, you know, what they need. And, you know, Mariam works with young people, as do I. And, you know, there are people who are being put out of their homes, you know, being put out of programs, being put out on the street, and many people not having the things they need, you know, from medicine to, you know, whatever it is. And
yeah, just kind of feeling, I think John is back.
Oh, John is back.
Oh, but that was a beautifully compassionate share. And a perfect way to say, does anybody want to share anything from their conversation that you thought we'd all might enjoy hearing or inspire us or just whatever, support us? Or that you're struggling with that you'd like to talk about a little more too. We have a few minutes. Or anything.
Well, John and I were talking about how this just is all kind of a microcosm of our regular life, you know, and it's like you know, no matter what's happening in your regular life, there's always the temptation to future trip and stress and give into anxieties, and then you can come back to the practice. And being sort of contained in your little home unit, it really just puts a fine point for me anyway on how that practice is really always available to you. And it's not really so much the external factors that are leading to the things we struggle with. It's always there with you. And being at home all the time really puts a point on that and invites you back to the practice. So we were having that conversation.
Yeah, and actually, it partly drove from what Tripp talked about last week, and that I found myself, you know, thinking about over the week, this past week too, that there can be a tendency to think, oh, you know, as soon as this shelter in place is over, and I can go back to going out to eat or my friends or partying or whatever it is, then I'll be so happy. Everything's going to be fine. And it reminded me so much of the way I think when there's something that I do that's kind of neurotic or not so skillful, as we say in Buddhism, that I think, okay, you know, I'll just do it one more time and then I won't do it again. And then of course that makes it worse because I just reinforce it. And so, you know, yeah, it's sort of a contemplation that we're here in a, you know, with Basho secluded in the hut, in our own 21st century hut in a And it brings all these conditions, and there's struggles and joys, and there's beauty. There's beauty we can find. And then as it changes, and we're in back in a world that might resemble more before, that there'll be different struggles, different beauties, different touching moments, different joyful moments. And sort of we'll have what's lovely about this Monday nights, we have each other and we have a practice that we're all engaged in through it all.
John, thank you so much. So let's sit together for 1 minute as we close. So may our time together, being in community and meditating together and listening to the Dharma, may it be for the benefit of each and every one of us, and may that benefit spread to all beings everywhere. May all of us and all beings everywhere be healthy and well and be safe and free from danger and from harm. And may all of us in these difficult times be able to live with ease and well-being. And ultimately, may all of us and all beings be free.